Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. The following interview is designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be. Your host, Derek Champagne, is the founder and CEO of The Artist Evolution, a full-service agency building successful brands, marketing tools, and campaigns, and also the author of the best-selling book, Don't Buy a Duck. And now, let's begin today's Leadership Series interview.
Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where our goal is to inspire you to become the best leader that you can be. This is our Series 3 of Shark Tank Veteran Interviews, where we talk to some amazing entrepreneurs and business leaders who've been on the hit TV show Shark Tank and have come on our show to talk about it. So first up today, we have Aaron Marino, who has been on Shark Tank not once, but twice, and even got a deal offer from Barbara that he turned down, and the offer was for him just to endorse her products. He's got that big of a personality. He's that big of a YouTube sensation. So here's our talk with Aaron Marino of Pete and Pedro.
Got an awesome guest today. He is the founder of Pete and Pedro. You may have seen him on the TV show Shark Tank, not once, but twice. He is also the star of the Alpha M Project and founder of I Am Alpha M, YouTube sensation, serial entrepreneur. Welcome to the program today.
Derek, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk.
Man, Aaron, I remember seeing you the first time on Shark Tank, and we won't stay on Shark Tank, I promise. But and then you popped up again the second time, and we've interviewed some other guests on Shark Tank. You know, your story really stood out to me. My business, I'm a branding and marketing consultant, and you have mastered the craft of building a brand. I mean, amazing. And so I said, man, we've got to get a hold of this amazing entrepreneur and talk to him. So,
wow, thank you. That's incredible. Thank you so much for the compliment. I didn't realize how important branding was until really it was a few years ago. And I think that I have done a pretty good job. There are some things that if I could go back in time and change, I would have. But, you know, all things considered, yeah, it is all about the brand. And with all my businesses, really trying to figure out and hone in on what that brand is, what the strategy is, and what it looks like. So thank you for the compliment.
If someone were to ask you, a stranger were to meet you and say, who are you? What do you do? Because you've got so much going on. How in a sentence do you introduce yourself?
My wife put the kibosh on me telling people that I make videos for a living. Yes. She's like, you sound like a pornographer. I said, okay. So basically what I say that I do is I'm a content creator. First and foremost, it is my job to make video and to create content. And then from that content that I've been posting since 2008, it has led me to create other businesses and other vertical businesses off of this audience that I've been lucky enough to find. And so that's really what I do. I am an entrepreneur. There's nothing that gets me more excited and more fired up than thinking about business, new businesses, how I could sort of, you know, craft the business a little bit different than what else is out there. And I just love business, man. That is what gets me up in the morning.
Well, you are definitely front and center in your business. And so I'm just curious, what are the pressures and then what's the upside of being that much of the face of your brand? On Shark Tank, the second time, was it Barbara that made an offer just so that you would endorse products that she sent your way? She wanted the deal.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's a blessing and a curse to be this basically front and center in your business. It's great. Because, you know, you get to really drive the ship and dictate what you put out there, and you're really only responsible for yourself and you know, what you say and all that good stuff. And so that's good. The downside, though, what I've come to realize is that if I ever wanted to exit any of my businesses, I can't.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm so entwined in every business that I have for the most part that it's really difficult to look long term in terms of an exit strategy or getting out. I'm kind of stuck. But the good news is that it took me so long to get here that I am seeing some success now, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. So I don't know what 10 years from now looks like, or even 5 years. Hell, I don't know what next year looks like, but I'm just going to, you know, continue to you know, sort of go with my gut and figure out things as they come at me. And so I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, absolutely does. And so, I mean, for our audience to put perspective, you've got, I think I looked at it today, you had over 1.5 million subscribers just on your YouTube channel alone, and then you've got millions and millions and millions of views, and when you put something out and you've got hundreds of thousands of people that watch and comment, so you have a very captive, loyal, engaged audience, which is what most of us spend our entire careers, especially post social media, trying to figure out how to capture.
Yeah, it's, and that's really what the focus is on taking care of my audience. And, you know, at the end of the day, the number one priority that I have every day is getting up and creating content. It's what I need to do in order to drive all these other businesses. And so, you know, not losing sight that, you know, even though today was a very busy day, for example, you know, the first thing, though, I had to focus on is what got me here. And that is creating content for people and just showing that authentic self and giving them content that's engaging and that's helpful and entertaining at the same time.
That's awesome. But you've created a hungry beast that needs to be continually fed content all the time, haven't you?
Yeah, and that's the other upside. And there's two sides to every coin in my world. You know, the upside is that, yeah, it's fantastic. I've got this very ravenous fan base and audience that consumes my content and whatever product I talk about or promote or my own. But on the other side, there's that beast that I need to keep feeding. I need to keep creating content. If I stop, everything stops.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So can you take me back in time? Can you point to a time in your career or in your social media presence or whatever it might be where you realize that you were about to take a crazy ride? I mean, there's so many people that create content and that do an okay job of it, but they don't all have the eyeballs. What for you, can you define a moment, or did it just happen?
It's been such a, see, that's what's so interesting. It took me, I think, 6 years to get to 100,000 subscribers. Okay. And so it was a grind. I started back in 2008. And then in the last 18 months, I gained 1.4 million.
Wow.
And so, you know, so the overnight success took a whole lot longer than you would probably imagine.
Sure.
So it, you know what? It's funny. When I posted my first video, I didn't have any idea what I was really doing. I knew that I had a video camera. I knew I had a big mouth, and I had a mechanism to actually put it out there, which was YouTube. And I really didn't understand it that much. And I didn't understand the whole concept of subscribers or audience. I just thought, hey, I've got a video camera. Let me make a video. And at the time, I had an image consulting business helping, you know, men look better, feel better, and all that good stuff. And this was after a very, very tumultuous business, you know, explosion that was a fitness center that I had prior to that. And so, you know, the moment that I actually posted my first video, though, and I got a comment and somebody asked me a question, that was all it took. I was hooked at that point. Because I think for so long, I was really just kind of struggling to find out what my voice was, what my message was, and where my audience was. And I found a home on YouTube.
Right.
And so it was finally, for the first time, I really felt like I had an audience. And so from that point, it was like, oh gosh, I got to put out more content and more content. And I fell in love with it.
Well, what an amazing platform that YouTube has been for you too. I mean, the other social media outlets as well, but
there's nothing like YouTube.
No, it's amazing.
For any entrepreneur out there, if you are thinking about posting videos, don't think, do it.
Right.
And you know, a lot of people don't get started because, oh, I don't know if I'll be good enough, or I don't like myself on camera, or I don't like my voice. I sucked for the first 1,000 videos I put out. And you know, you are going to stink when you first start, but you just need to keep putting it out there. There's nothing like YouTube. You know, if you've got a customer, I mean, you get to know somebody. Like when you watch a video, you feel like you know this person.
Right.
And it's changed the game in terms of advertising and marketing. No longer do, you know, companies, or where do you go to buy things, or where do you go to learn things? It's YouTube.
Right.
And so it is such an amazingly powerful platform to let your customers get to know you and to meet you prior to actually asking them to spend money with you.
Hmm. I know you're true to yourself and to your brand and to making sure that you take care of your listeners, as evidenced by not taking the deal. And initially from television appearances, it looked like you took a deal, but I know that you did not end up doing that. But you do get endorsements, right? I mean, I think I saw that on Shark Tank, where you've got companies that do have you be their spokesperson, correct?
I've got more than you can imagine.
Right. Something you can share with us?
Yeah. I mean, right now I'm so busy with inquiries from different advertisers wanting me to talk about their product and the brand that I actually hired a salesperson. It was so successful and he did such a great job. I actually have all these friends that are content creators and social media as well. And so I decided to sort of team up with him and create an agency. And so we have an agency called Menfluential Media, where we represent about 17 of the really big men's lifestyle influencers. Hmm. And, you know, in terms of brands, I've promoted everything from socks to I'm getting ready to promote a scotch, Glenlivet, or Livic. I have to figure out how to pronounce it before I actually do the video on Monday. Livic. And, you know, everything in between, from Audible.com to clothing companies to grooming products, because I focus and sort of the content I create is generally like men's lifestyle. Right. Lifestyle encompasses everything. And so if it's pertaining to a man, I pretty much can promote it.
That's great that you have that lifestyle category. It gives you more opportunities for endorsements too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome. So take me back a little bit. You've been an entrepreneur for many years. I've read up on your bio. I know that you had your fitness center, but tell me a little bit about the success you experienced and the journey that you had early as an entrepreneur. How does any of that apply to you today? What did you learn from those early days? It's a big difference to what you do now.
That's the whole thing. My early days was not there. I don't know if I would qualify anything as successful in my early days.
But that's okay. Me personally, I've had successful businesses that I've sold, and I've had some that have failed. But those scars I got from the failures actually taught me a lot, either to be cautious in some times, and other times it taught me to jump fast and move quickly. And I was able to identify some of the duds.
No, absolutely. And I wouldn't go back and trade anything for the world. Cool. I've had a few businesses. I knew from a very young age I wanted to own a fitness center. And so I got a degree in business management. Graduated, met a guy, and he was interested in starting a nutrition store. And so we started a nutrition store, and I knew pretty quickly that that wasn't some place I wanted to be. He was actually selling drugs out of the back. And so I wasn't the sharpest tool in the shed, but I knew that prison wasn't a place that I would flourish. I'd be popular, but I would definitely would not do well. And so So essentially, from there, I opened my fitness center, and I met a woman. We opened up a small personal training studio, and long, painful story short, that just did not work out. We tried to expand. We had some business partners that we shouldn't have taken, and ultimately, it ended up with us filing bankruptcy and me driving a beer cart at a golf course on weekends to make ends meet. And this is when I'm a 30-year-old guy.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm the type of entrepreneur that never has a plan B. I'm plan A all the time until something happens that I realize I need to come up with a plan B. So with those other failures, it just sort of led me to this image consulting thing, because it was something I could do that I really enjoyed, that I was doing a little bit with some of my male clients at the fitness center. And, you know, I did that for a while, and it ultimately then led to a YouTube video, and the rest is kind of history. And so through all the failures, I have learned many, many, many valuable lessons. And so now I'm in a very unique position where I need to be very cautious, and I need to work every day like somebody's trying to take it from me. But I wake up every morning with I say to my daily affirmation is, all right, don't F it up today. And I don't actually say F, I say the real word. And it's something that every day I just got to stay focused and do my best. And I don't know how long this is going to last. I don't know how long I'll be on this ride, but, you know, hopefully I'll be smart enough to know when it's time to get off.
Where does your passion and your drive come from?
Just the passion and the drive comes from just having this insane desire to be successful. And I never really understood what success meant to me. I thought it meant having a chain. At one point, I thought it meant having a chain of 27 nutrition stores. Right. And then after that, it was 150 fitness centers, and nothing else was going to mean success. Huh. But the moment because I've always struggled with, you know, the financial end of things, I mean, from growing up super poor to, you know, businesses that were horribly unprofitable. You know, the moment that I didn't think about money and have to worry about that was when I realized that I was successful. Because from that moment, when I took that weight or the burden of the financial pressures of, you know, just you know, it was almost like hustle to hustle to try and make ends meet. When I took that away, it allowed me to get super creative. Because so much brain power and energy was focused on just trying to worry about my bills, that once that was gone, I realized that I was free. I was free emotionally. I was free financially. I could do what I wanted to do, not spend lavishly, of course. And I still am the poor kid from Philly in my head, even though I can afford, you know, to buy a nice watch if I want one.
Right.
You know, I don't even know what question you asked. I just sort of went off on a little bit of a tangent.
No, that was great. I'd asked where your passion comes from, but
yeah, success. And so it's just finally feeling like I'm validated. And, and you know, aside from, you know, being financially secure now, the comments and the interaction and the engagement that I get from my audience really is what fuels me. I mean, I get up every day and think that I'm the luckiest guy in the world, because I really feel like I have the ability to touch some lives and change them. And so that is super powerful and something that I don't take for granted for one second, because I know what the other side looks like. And and this is just a very, very pleasant place to be, to say the least.
So you feel satisfied. I mean, some people talk about success and yes, at a certain point when your needs are met. And I can relate to that too. But
I'm satisfied in some regards, but I am hungry like you wouldn't believe, because I've tasted success now. Now it's more. I want more. I can do more. I can run faster. I can, you know, I've got some friends that operate in the information product and the social media space. So they're all about creating info products. And they are doing this so that they can create a lifestyle of freedom and flexibility and being able to vacation. And me, right now, I am in the mode of, all right, let's see how fast I can take this and far I can take this without crashing. So, you know, it's all speed ahead for
me. But you get to be creative too. And I talk sometimes about the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And when you're in that lowest survival mode, which is our instincts of hunger and shelter. And a lot of times businesses are making their decisions from there, and they're not making their best decisions. So when your needs are met, you can be from the top of the pyramid and you can start to think more creatively. I think a lot of beautiful things are created there that are even better than at the bottom of the pyramid, which is just a survival mode.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more, Derek.
Love
you said
to see
it much more eloquently than I did. Thank you.
No, you said it great.
Love talking with Aaron Marino. You can hear the passion and his zest for life. That's one of the reasons why he's so successful. He's a really smart entrepreneur, great at branding. If you haven't listened to my full interview with him, go back through the archives of the Business Leadership Series. It's a great interview. He talks about not getting your feelings hurt. He talks about learning from the marketplace. He just gives a lot of solid gold in there that's worth listening to. Hey, our next guest is Bo Euler. He was also on Shark Tank, a really impressive guy, really smart, owns Enlisted Design. He's got several of the products that he's had. He's one of the top businesses in the country. He's won so many awards, and he's there in Silicon Valley area, just doing great things. So let's check in with Bo on our interview, where he talks about his experience on Shark Tank and talks about some of the things that he learned in the marketplace with his product. We've got Bo Euler with us today. He is the founder of Enlisted Design and Urbio. You've probably seen him on Shark Tank, and he's got many other accolades. Bo, welcome to the program today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
I remember watching you on Shark Tank a couple of years ago. My wife and I thought the product was really cool. It was very innovative. You have some highlights, 40 Under 40 with San Francisco Business Times, Diablo Magazine, fastest growing private companies in the San Francisco Bay Area. Listed as best entrepreneurial companies in America by Entrepreneur Magazine. That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, it's been exciting the last few years. We've really, I wouldn't say hit our stride, because we're still accelerating. But the growth of the company and really the growth of the opportunities to design and innovate and create over the last couple of years has really been phenomenal. Right. Super grateful.
Give me a little bit of your background. I mean, I know that you had a Kickstarter campaign, which I want to talk to you about that too, but maybe even back up before that, did you have an entrepreneurial background or design background prior to that? Give us some of the early days for you, the highlights.
Yeah, absolutely. So real early days, I grew up in Central Coast, California, and my grandpa taught design down in LA for 30 years. And so when I'd go visit my grandpa, he had this just amazing shop in back behind their house. And I'd go to LA for the week, and we'd just build, we'd just make, we'd just create things out in the shop. And he would take me to his school to meet his students and to see the furniture that they were designing or the products that they were designing. And I was always inspired by that, just this idea of making things that makes people's lives better. And so at first I was studying architecture, and then I had this epiphanous moment where I said, well, I don't want to design things that are, you know, massive. I want to design things that can fit in someone's hand and that they can use every day. And so I switched schools. I moved from Utah to San Francisco and went to the Academy of Art to study industrial design. And that's where the day I walked into the ID school there, I just knew that I had met kind of my purpose, my professional purpose in life. And so I went through the academy there and then started my career in product design while I was in school. I was part of a very small team for Williams-Sonoma, the national retailer, designing high-end housewares and homewares and kitchen goods. And that was really cool to be able to work with different materials, you know, designing melamine mixing bowls that are still at Williams-Sonoma.
That's very cool.
Or barbecue tools, or, you know, being able to work with steel and wood and plastics. And then knowing, I mean, I'm a total techie. And so as much as I loved the home goods of Williams-Sonoma, I really wanted to design tech products, but with that lifestyle approach to tech products. And so I went to a consultancy in San Francisco, and one of the top consultancies, and worked my way up there. I was lead designer. And then in 2008, decided to break off and start Enlisted, so that for a couple of reasons, really. One was because it was always my ultimate goal to start my own design agency. And I wanted to do it at the right time and for the right reasons. And the reason for me and the way that I worked was, and still is, extremely collaboratively. And so I loved the idea of being able to invite a client to the studio for the day and say, hey, you know, you are the best at what you do, and I'm the best at what I do. Let's sit down and do it together rather than separately and kind of have this big reveal. And so that's why we're Enlisted, because we literally enlist our clients into our creative team, and we become so tight with our clients that they then enlist us in their business team. And Enlisted, it started with just myself and a business partner, and now we're 30 people based in Oakland, and we essentially create, and we create brands, we create products, we create meaningful experiences for consumers.
I love that. Thanks for sharing that part of your story. I love the collaboration angle, and we see a lot of agencies that don't like to collaborate in that way, but rather like to do the big reveal. So that's an interesting concept. How has that been received? I imagine it's an amazing response. The majority of your clients really appreciate being part of that process.
Yeah, they really do. And you know, when a client comes into Enlisted, you know, we're still this up and coming studio, right? So there's this risk factor of, well, wait, who's Enlisted? Oh, wow, you guys do the work for them and them and them. Okay, cool. I think I can trust you. And then once they have a taste of our process and the collaboration, they don't go anywhere, they stay. And we just become closer and closer. So it's been received very, very well. Hasn't been received as well by other design studios, and I'm okay with that, because it's really changing the model of design agency. And since we've been beating this drum for the last 8 years of true collaboration, now we're starting to see other agencies come out and say and do and kind of model after, you know, this this small, mighty power here in Oakland.
That's very cool. You kind of disrupted the industry the way that it was.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And we're still doing that and really looking at what is next level collaboration and how do we get there.
That's really cool. Very cool to be pioneering it like that in your industry. Hey, tell me a little bit about your Kickstarter campaign. And I know you guys were very successful. Yeah. You had like a 500% over the, take me through that process when you started the company. That's why.
Yeah, you bet. So kind of two different companies here. It started with Enlisted Design, and that's our design studio that we still have today. Right. Mm-hmm. But at Enlisted, we had this need, and the need was kind of small space organization. How do we store all this stuff that's all over our desks in a way that can get it off of our desks and still be beautiful? Mm-hmm. And then likewise, we were looking at kind of designing out our studio space and thought, gosh, let's bring the outdoors in and have, you know, you'd be able to grow plants indoors. And so we just started kind of tinkering and building and ideating around this idea of kind of small space, small containers that could contain everything from pens to plants. And we built a few prototypes, and my business partner had this idea of magnets. So wouldn't it be fun to put magnets in these little pots, these little storage pots, that you could create this modular system all over your wall to be able to store? And so we built some prototypes and we did a Kickstarter campaign. This was in year one of Kickstarter. Okay. So like hardly anybody had heard of Kickstarter yet.
Okay.
And we became one of the highest grossing Kickstarter projects of the year. And it just took off like wildfire. And so we closed the Kickstarter campaign. That helped us pay for tooling to be able to launch the brand. But it was exciting to do that. But for us, it really was a matter of us as Enlisted saying, okay, this is what we do for our clients. We create brands. We create products. We create packaging. We create in-store merchandising. Like, at what point are we going to put our money where our mouth is and do it for ourselves?
Yeah.
And that's what Urbio is. So we launched Urbio on Kickstarter and launched the website, myurbio.com, at the same time for direct orders as well. We killed it on Kickstarter, which was really fun. And then a few months after we closed our Kickstarter campaign, got a call from a producer at Shark Tank. And the producer called and he just said, you know, my name's so-and-so, and I just want to chat with you about Shark Tank. And now to give some context, I had watched Shark Tank up to that point every season, every episode. Like, I was a huge, like,
cool.
Date night was my wife and I on the couch watching Shark Tank,
right.
and me going, honey, I'm going to be on that show one day.
Yeah.
and so when this guy called, I was just, you know, beyond stoked.
Yeah.
But what was interesting about it is that, you know, that season they had 24,000 applicants apply for the show. And so he was pre-screening me before I ever applied. And he basically quizzed me for about 2 hours on the phone. You know, what's your favorite episode? Who's your favorite shark and why? What's your favorite experience that you've seen on the show? What would you do in this scenario? And evidently I answered him correctly, because at the end he said, you've got to apply for the show.
Wow.
So we applied. You know, we had to go through the same process that everybody else did. And we did, and we got on the show and we got to make our pitch. And that moment changed everything for this, you know, idea, this Urbio brand that we had created.
That's amazing. You had three sharks that were interested in your product.
Yeah. I mean, you know, having watched the show and seeing how people just get pummeled on the show, we didn't exactly know what was going to happen. And let's put it in context also, like us on the show, Jared and I, we were business partners of a design studio. We were not MBAs. Okay. And here we were launching our second company and as designers, right? So this is very brand forward, design forward company.
Right.
And ultimately that's what sold it on Kickstarter, on the Shark Tank.
So you did a deal with
the Shark Tank. Yeah. We did. So we have three different sharks fighting after it and raising our valuation for us. Which you don't see very often
No, you do not. And that must have been a surreal experience for you there, especially having, I mean, we've interviewed people that had not heard the show or had barely seen it, but then we've others that are fans. But for you to have seen all the episodes and knowing what could happen in there, good and bad, that's pretty surreal to see them raising an evaluation like that. So walk me through the rest of the experience.
Yeah, so we ended up partnering with Lori Grenier, and we did that because of her retail experience with QVC and then, you know, with others as well. And and what's cool about Shark Tank, A, is that you have 9 million people watching the show. So, you know, show me a better platform to launch a new brand than Shark Tank, right? That's A. B, you have this these sharks who are experts in their different fields who want to be your partner, right? So we partnered with Lori, and after the show, it just goes into contracting, right? So the show itself is kind of like a dating service. Okay. There's no contracts from just being on the show. And then afterwards you go into the contracting, and contracting was tough. I'll be honest. It was really tough. And we didn't agree to the terms that Lori set out, and she didn't agree to the terms that we requested. And so after about 4 or 5 months of trying to figure it out, we ended up not taking her funding, and not partnering up with her.
But tell me about
it. It was unfortunate.
But what about post Shark Tank? Tell me about the sales that came after the product, and just tell me what a platform that was for you, though.
Yeah. So absolutely. So we grossed $100,000 in sales within days of being on Shark Tank on our website on myurbio.com. It brought huge attention to Urbio. It brought huge attention to Enlisted Design, and you know, and our phones were just ringing on both companies. And it was great. And people were buying the product. Shortly after Shark Tank, we launched in the Container Store in all 60 stores that they had. And that was great. And they actually gave us an opportunity to be on NCAP in all of their stores.
Wow.
And to this day, Urbio is still on NCAP at the Container Store now, 2.5-3 years later.
That's getting an NCAP enough is hard to do, but to keep it for that long is impressive.
It is. Yeah, it is. And it really set the tone. So what happens within retailers is retail buyers are looking for halo brands, right? And a halo brand, it may not be the highest grossing product or the highest velocity product in their store, but it elevates their category. Mm-hmm. And so when we're looking at Urbio in garden or Urbio in organization, the different buyers from Target to Container Store to Office Max, Office Depot, Staples, they all recognized Urbio for a well-designed, well-branded, really smart, fun product. And so it became this halo brand that was sought after by these buyers. And so we got NCAP in every single one of those stores.
That's incredible. Tell me any other highlights, too, coming out of that experience.
Yeah, so we separated Urbio as a company from Enlisted, and the Urbio team that we had hired moved out and moved down the street in downtown Oakland and opened up their own office. We hired a CEO from New York to come in and help us scale the company, and that's just what we did. So within 1 year, we scaled from about 80 stores to 1,500 stores.
Wow.
And nationwide. And that was massive growth, and it was scary, and it was exciting, and we were able to really get our product into a lot of people's homes. So it was really, really fun.
I remember interviewing somebody that grew too fast with Walmart and took on more stores than they could handle, and they were pretty open about, oh, here's what we probably should have done differently, or here's what we did really well. Any hindsight saying, you know, here's a few that we weren't expecting to run into that we overcame or that were surprises that stand out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a very fine balance between aspiration and insanity, and that's what I learned in this process, okay? You want aspirational goals. You want goals that are audacious, aspirational, and that everyone can look at and as a team say, yes, we are going to do that. And we did that, but our goals were not aspirational. Our goals were insane. And what that did is it fired us up and gave us the energy and excitement to go and launch in 1,500 stores in 1 year, okay, which is awesome.
Right.
But what it also did is we became reckless in accomplishing those goals. And so we took on a ton of debt to be able to fund all of that product. We went into, you know, let's take Office Depot, Office Max, for example. Instead of saying, hey, let's just go into 400 stores like we did with Target, we had the opportunity to go in all 1,200 of their stores. And we took the opportunity. And what happens is a brand like Urbio, it's not applicable to every, or it's not desirable to every consumer market. And so we had some Office Depot stores that couldn't keep it on the shelf.
Right.
And we had some Office Depot stores who, like, they didn't sell anything. Hmm. And, but because we decided to launch in all of their stores, we got bit, and we got bit hard. And so there was a lot of products that that had to go on discount, and we had to pay those discounts. And so ultimately the business got into a position where we had to change our trajectory of massive tech startup type growth to more responsible scale growth. And what happened, though, is that we had had so much momentum on the massive growth that we got into a place where we became over-leveraged as a company and had to make some really tough decisions. And the tough decisions were, do we raise more capital or do we sell the brand? And so we chose to sell the company, to sell the brand. And so in February of this year, we sold Urbio to a really cool company out of Chicago called Honey Can Do.
Yeah.
And so Honey Can Do does mostly private label products for Bed Bath & Beyond, Target, Container Store, Walmart. And they were looking for a halo brand, a line of products that have a really strong brand that resonates with consumers. And so it was just a really good fit for both companies, and we sold Urbio to them earlier this year.
Man, thanks for sharing your experience there. That's a good lesson for many of us. And when you're making that decision, I can't imagine when you're having that kind of tech growth. I mean, that's so exciting. I mean, that is an entrepreneur's dream. That's the addiction. That's your reward. And so I can imagine when you realize you're doing a slower, more scaled growth, that it's tough to keep the motivation after what you've seen. How did you guys, from a mental standpoint, how did your team pull together and make the best decision? What was that like for you guys?
Yeah, it was very difficult. And we had to let some key people go who weren't in line with that decision. And that was tough because, you know, we were a small team, and we were a team that many of us had worked together for 4, 5, 6 years. And so, you know, it was really tough to have to make those decisions. But then once we got down to the kind of core leadership, we just knew what the right thing to do was.
Right.
And likewise, we knew what we had to do because the company had been over leveraged. We were really stuck in this position of, okay, well, you know, are we going to sell? Are we going to raise capital? Or what are we going to do here? And really what it came down to is we knew that a company like Honey Can Do would be able to grow the Urbio brand and put it in more people's homes than we could do on our own.
Yeah.
And that's where when you're an entrepreneur and you love this thing that you've created, right? And it has its personality and it has its products, it has its brand. You want that brand to thrive.
That's right.
And so you have to ask yourself, is it going to thrive in my household or is it going to thrive better in someone else's? And when that someone else has a business and a business model that can scale your brand or your idea, for me, it was a simple solution because I looked at Honey Can Do and I saw that they could scale my dream and my vision into something greater than I could.
That's really cool. You guys did what a lot of people aspire for a lifetime and don't accomplish, which is building something that is a value that's your baby, but you make it bigger than you. And so it needed to, it needed to continue on. And so that's awesome. That's really cool that you guys did that. Congratulations.
Thanks. And I feel fortunate to be able to recognize kind of the right timing and the right opportunity. And I think that came really from my work at Enlisted, where we partner with startups, you know, and also just from friends here in the Bay Area, where, you know, somebody will start a company and Google will come along or whoever will come along and say, yeah, great company. We totally believe in you. We want to acquire you and bring you in-house. You know, here's $50 million.
Right.
And I've known people time and time again who say, what? No. My company, my idea is way bigger than $50 million. And so they don't sell. Right. And then, right. you know, a couple of years later, they fold, fold, or they, you know, sell for $5 million or they, you know, whatever. Right.
Right.
And now that's not always the case. And I'm an eternal optimist. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the question that an entrepreneur needs to ask themselves is how, if they really believe in their product, then how can they execute on the idea or on the company in a larger way on a larger stage. And so when a Google comes along or a HoneyCanDo comes along and says, hey, I can take this and scale it, I think that if you really love your brand, you need to look at it and go, yes, let's do this together and let's scale this thing bigger.
Yeah. Wow. Great input from Bo Euler. I want to thank both of our guests, Aaron Marino and Bo Euler, for coming on our show, for being friends of our show. Thank our listeners, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. This interview was designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be.